Chapter 142. Much lower key. Once had a friend and brother sergeant of the same name, says Mr. Bucket, offering his hand, and consequently feel a liking for it. Mrs. Chadband, no doubt. And Mrs. Snagsby, Mr. Smallweed introduces. Husband a law stationer and a friend of my own, says Mr. Bucket. Love him like a brother. Now, what's up? Do you mean what business have we come upon? Mr. Smallweed asks, a little dashed by the suddenness of this turn. Ah, you know what I mean. Let us hear what it's all about in presence of Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet. Come. Mr. Smallweed, beckoning Mr. Chadband, takes a moment's counsel with him in a whisper. Mr. Chadband, expressing a considerable amount of oil from the pores of his forehead and the palms of his hands, says aloud, yes, you first, and retires to his former place. I was the client and friend of Mr. Tulkinghorn, Pipe's grandfather Smallweed then. I did business with him. I was useful to him, and he was useful to me. Crook, dead and gone, was my brother-in-law. He was own brother to a brimstone magpie leastways Mrs. Smallweed. I come into Crook's property. I examined all his papers and all his effects. They was all dug out under my eyes. There was a bundle of letters belonging to a dead and gone lodger as was hid away at the back of a shelf in the side of Lady Jane's bed, his cat's bed. He hid all manner of things away, everywheres. Mr. Tulkinghorn wanted them and got 'em, but I looked 'em over first. I'm a man of business, and I took a squint at 'em. They was letters from the lodger's sweetheart, and she signed Honoria. Dear me, that's not a common name, Honoria, is it? There's no lady in this house that signs Honoria, is there? Oh, no, I don't think so. Oh, no, I don't think so. And not in the same hand, perhaps? Oh, no, I don't think so. Here Mr. Smallweed, seized with a fit of coughing in the midst of his triumph, breaks off to ejaculate, oh, dear me. Oh, Lord. I'm shaken all to pieces. Now, when you're ready, says Mr. Bucket, after awaiting his recovery, to come to anything that concerns Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, here the gentleman sits, you know. Haven't I come to it, Mr. Bucket? Cries Grandfather Smallweed. Isn't the gentleman concerned yet? Not with Captain Auden, and his ever affectionate Honoria, and their child into the bargain? Come, then, I want to know where those letters are. That concerns me, if it don't concern Sir Leicester Dedlock. I will know where they are. I won't have them disappear so quietly. I handed them over to my friend and solicitor, Mr. Tulkinghorn, not to anybody else. Why, he paid you for them, you know, and handsome too, says Mr. Bucket. I don't care for that. I want to know who's got them. And I tell you, what we all here want, Mr. Bucket. We want more painstaking and search-making into this murder. We know where the interest and the motive was, and you have not done enough. If George the Vagabond Dragoon had any hand in it, he was only an accomplice, and was set on. You know what I mean as well as any man. Now I tell you what, says Mr. Bucket, instantaneously altering his manner, coming close to him, and communicating an extraordinary fascination to the forefinger, I am damned, if I am a-going, to have my case spoiled, or interfered with, or anticipated by, so much as half a second of time by any human being in creation. You want more painstaking and search-making? You do? Do you see this hand, and do you think that I don't know the right time to stretch it out and put it on the arm that fired that shot? Such is the dread power of the man, and so terribly evident it is that he makes no idle boast, that Mr. Smallweed begins to apologize. Mr. Bucket, dismissing his sudden anger, checks him. The advice I give you is, don't you trouble your head about the murder. That's my affair. You keep half an eye on the newspapers, and I shouldn't wonder if you was to read something about it before long, if you look sharp. I know my business, And that's all I've got to say to you on that subject. Now about those letters. You want to know who's got them? I don't mind telling you. I have got them. Is it the packet? Mr. Smallweed looks, with greedy eyes, at the little bundle Mr. Bucket produces from a mysterious part of his coat, and identifies it as the same. What have you got to say next? Asks Mr. Bucket. Now, don't open your mouth too wide, because you don't look handsome when you do it. I want £500. No, you don't. You mean 50, says Mr. Bucket humorously. It appears, however, that Mr. Smallweed means 500. That is, I am deputed by Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, to consider without admitting or promising anything this bit of business, says Mr. Bucket. Sir Leicester mechanically bows his head, and you ask me to consider a proposal of £500. Why, it's an unreasonable proposal. 250 would be bad enough, but better than that. Hadn't you better say 250? Mr. Smallweed is quite clear that he had better not. Then, says Mr. Bucket, let's hear Mr. Chadband. Lord! Many a time I've heard my old fellow sergeant of that name, and a moderate man he was in all respects, as ever I come across. Thus invited, Mr. Chadband steps forth, and after a little sleek smiling, and a little oil grinding with the palms of his hands, delivers himself as follows: My friends, we are now Rachel, my wife, and I in the mansions of the rich and great. Why are we now in the mansions of the rich and great, my friends? Is it because we are invited? Because we are bidden to feast with them, because we are bidden to rejoice with them, because we are bidden to play the lute with them, because we are bidden to dance with them? No. Then why are we here, my friends? Are we in possession of a sinful secret, and do we require corn, and wine, and oil, or what is much the same thing, money, for the keeping thereof? Probably so, my friends. You're a man of business, you are, returns Mr. Bucket, very attentive, and consequently you're going on to mention what the nature of your secret is. You are right. You couldn't do better. Let us then, my brother, in a spirit of love, says Mr. Chadband with a cunning eye, proceed unto it. Rachel, my wife, advance. Mrs. Chadband, more than ready, so advances as to jostle her husband into the background, and confronts Mr. Bucket with a hard, frowning smile. Since you want to know what we know, says she, I'll tell you. I helped to bring up Miss Hawdon, her ladyship's daughter. I was in the service of her ladyship's sister, who was very sensitive to the disgrace her ladyship brought upon her, and gave out, even to her ladyship, that the child was dead. She was very nearly so when she was born. But she's alive, and I know her. With these words, and a laugh, and laying a bitter stress on the word ladyship, Mrs. Chadband folds her arms and looks implacably at Mr. Bucket. I suppose now, returns that officer, you will be expecting a £20 note, or a present of about that figure. Mrs. Chadband merely laughs and contemptuously tells him he can offer 20 pence. My friend the law stationer's good lady, over there, says Mr. Bucket, luring Mrs. Snagsby forward with a finger. What may your game be, ma'am? Mrs. Snagsby is at first prevented, by tears and lamentations, from stating the nature of her game, but by degrees it confusedly comes to light that she is a woman overwhelmed with injuries and wrongs, whom Mr. Snagsby has habitually deceived, abandoned, and sought to keep in darkness, and whose chief comfort, under her afflictions, has been the sympathy of the late Mr. Tulkinghorn, who showed so much commiseration for her on one occasion of his calling in Cook's Court in the absence of her perjured husband, that she has of late habitually carried to him all her woes. Everybody, it appears, the present company excepted, has plotted against Mrs. Snagsby's peace. There is Mr. Guppy, clerk to Kenjan Carboy, who was at first as open as the sun at noon, but who suddenly shut up as close as midnight, under the influence, no doubt, of Mr. Snagsby's suborning and tampering. There is Mr. Weevil, friend of Mr. Guppy, who lived mysteriously up a court, owing to the like coherent causes. There was Crook, deceased. There was Nimrod, deceased. And there was Joe, deceased. And they were all in it. And what, Mrs. Snagsby does not with particularity express, but she knows that Joe was Mr. Snagsby's son, as well as if a trumpet had spoken it, and she followed Mr. Snagsby, when he went on his last visit to the boy, and if he was not his son, why did he go? The one occupation of her life has been, for some time back, to follow Mr. Snagsby to and fro, and up and down, and to piece suspicious circumstances together, and every circumstance that has happened has been most suspicious. And in this way she has pursued her object of detecting and confounding her false husband, night and day. Thus did it come to pass, that she brought the Chadbands and Mr. Tulkinghorn together, and conferred with Mr. Tulkinghorn on the change in Mr. Guppy, and helped to turn up the circumstances in which the present company are interested. Casually, by the wayside, being still and ever on the great high road, that is to terminate in Mr. Snagsby's full exposure and a matrimonial separation. All this, Mrs. Snagsby, as an injured woman, and the friend of Mrs. Chadband, and the follower of Mr. Chadband, and the mourner of the late Mr. Tulkinghorn, is here to certify under the seal of confidence, with every possible confusion and involvement possible and impossible, having no pecuniary motive whatever, no scheme or project, but the one mentioned, and bringing here, and taking everywhere, her own dense atmosphere of dust, arising from the ceaseless working of her mill of jealousy. While this exordium is in hand, and it takes some time, Mr. Bucket, who has seen through the transparency of Mrs. Snagsby's vinegar at a glance, confers with his familiar demon and bestows his shrewd attention on the Chadbands and Mr. Smallweed. Sir Leicester Dedlock remains immovable, with the same icy surface upon him, except that he once or twice looks towards Mr. Bucket, as relying on that officer alone of all mankind. "Very good," says Mr. Bucket. "Now I understand you, you know, and being deputed by Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, to look into this little matter," again Sir Leicester mechanically bows in confirmation of the statement, "can give it my fair and full attention. Now I won't allude to conspiring, to extort money or anything of that sort, because we are men and women of the world here, and our object is to make things pleasant. But I tell you, what I do wonder at, I am surprised, that you should think of making a noise below in the hall. It was so opposed to your interests. That's what I look at. We wanted to get in," pleads Mr. Smallweed. "Why, of course you wanted to get in," Mr. Bucket asserts with cheerfulness. "But for a old gentleman at your time of life, what I call truly venerable, mind you, with his wits sharpened, as I have no doubt they are, by the loss of the use of his limbs, which occasions all his animation, to mount up into his head, not to consider that, if he don't keep such a business as the present as close as possible, it can't be worth a mag to him, is so curious. You see, your temper got the better of you. That's where you lost ground," says Mr. Bucket in an argumentative and friendly way. "I only said I wouldn't go without one of the servants, came up to Sir Leicester Dedlock," returns Mr. Smallweed. "That's it. That's where your temper got the better of you. Now, you keep it under another time, and you'll make money by it. Shall I ring for them to carry you down? When are we to hear more of this?" Mrs. Chadband sternly demands. "Bless your heart for a true woman. Always curious, your delightful sex is," replies Mr. Bucket with gallantry. "I shall have the pleasure of giving you a call tomorrow, or next day, not forgetting Mr. Smallweed, and his proposal of 250. 500, exclaims Mr. Smallweed. "All right. Nominally 500. Mr. Bucket has his hand on the bell rope. Shall I wish you good day for the present on the part of myself, and the gentleman of the house?" he asks in an insinuating tone. Nobody having the hardihood, to object to his doing so, he does it, and the party retire as they came up. Mr. Bucket follows them to the door, and returning, says with an air of serious business, "Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, it's for you to consider whether or not to buy this up. I should recommend, on the whole, its being bought up myself, and I think it may be bought pretty cheap. You see, that little pickled cowcomer of a Mrs. Snagsby has been used by all sides of the speculation, and has done a deal more harm in bringing odds and ends together than if she had meant it. Mr. Tulkinghorn, deceased, he held all these horses in his hand, and could have drove them his own way, I haven't a doubt. But he was fetched off the box head foremost, and now they have got their legs over the traces, and are all dragging and pulling their own ways. So it is, and such is life. The cat's away, and the mice they play, the frost breaks up, and the water runs. Now, with regard to the party to be apprehended. Sir Leicester seems to wake, though his eyes have been wide open, and he looks intently at Mr. Bucket as Mr. Bucket refers to his watch. The party to be apprehended is now in this house, proceeds Mr. Bucket, putting up his watch with a steady hand, and with rising spirits, and I'm about to take her into custody in your presence. Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, don't you say a word nor yet stir. There'll be no noise, and no disturbance at all. I'll come back in the course of the evening, if agreeable to you, and endeavor to meet your wishes respecting this unfortunate family matter, and the nobbiest way of keeping it quiet. Now, Sir Leicester Dedlock, Baronet, don't you be nervous on account of the apprehension at present coming off. You shall see the whole case clear, from first to last. Mr. Bucket rings, goes to the door, briefly whispers Mercury, shuts the door, and stands behind it with his arms folded. After a suspense of a minute or two, the door slowly opens and a Frenchwoman enters. Mademoiselle Hortense. The moment she is in the room, Mr. Bucket claps the door to, and puts his back against it. The suddenness of the noise occasions her to turn, and then for the first time she sees Sir Leicester Dedlock in his chair. "I ask you pardon," she mutters hurriedly. "They tell me there was no one here." Her step towards the door brings her front to front with Mr. Bucket. Suddenly a spasm shoots across her face, and she turns. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.